I think what's most interesting from those findings from that study is that biomass that from the cover crop that stays on the ground, it acts as a mulch. It stays on the soil. You know, that depends on how much biomass you have, and the carbon to nitrogen ratio is also another important thing there. But if you have those things, enough of those two things, that mulch effect will stay on for a long time, throughout soybean, the reproductive phases of the soybean, and that helps conserve soil moisture. And we saw that it actually helped the soybeans with water stress and translated into yields.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Grow a carbon crop below your row crop. Add carbon to your balance sheet with Loam Bio. Revenue grew, so did your hours. The owner's box, buy back 20 a week. Stop hiring for problems automation can solve. Start with Elevate Agents. Don't hire another VA stuck in 2015. Hire a remote AI specialist from Latin who runs AI tools, works in your time zone, and helps your team move faster. Schedule your free strategy call at www.wisevas.io. Zentrix OS, the business operating system built for teams who are serious about goals, tasks, and measurable results. One platform to run your entire operation. Zentrix Insights. The right person in the right seat starts with knowing how your team is actually wired. Visit ZentrixInsights.com.
Welcome to the Crop Science Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. I am Brian Ernell, and I'm coming to you from the campus of Oklahoma State University. Today, we have on Dr. Daniela Carajo, Assistant Professor and Extension Specialist of Grain Crop Production in the Department of Plant Sciences at Pennsylvania State University. Dr. Carajo's work focuses on corn, soy, and small grain systems with an emphasis on sustainable intensification, water and nutrient use efficiency, along with improving agronomic management through research and extension programming. She leads applied research that integrates field experimentation with data-driven decision tools to support producer recommendations. Her extension efforts translate research findings into practical guidance for farmers and stakeholders across Pennsylvania and beyond. Daniela, thank you so much for joining us today on the Crop Science Podcast.
Thank you, Brian. Happy to have me, to have you here.
So give our listeners a little bit of background. I don't believe you're from Pennsylvania. So how did you end up being the grain crop specialist at Penn State?
Yeah, no, I grew up in Brazil. I grew up in a family of farmers. My dad farms until today, corn and soybean, which is very typical of the region where we grew up. And
which is?
It's in Minas Gerais, if anybody knows.
Minas Gerais.
If you translate it to general mining.
Yes.
Apparently, there's a lot of mines up there. If people don't know, if you know where São Paulo is, São Paulo State, it's the state right north of that. My dad farms actually in Goiás, which is the other state north of that. And I lived a lot of my time there in Brazil in the state of São Paulo, because that's where I went to.
The two places I got most is Goiânia and São Paulo.
Okay. Yeah. So very cool. So grew up with that influence of agriculture, always liked, you know, plants, and biology was always my favorite subject in school. And so I think it was natural for me to go into agriculture in undergrad. And I guess I never really thought about, you know, grad school and actually becoming a professor and staying in academia until later in school. I was interested in research. And then it wasn't really until after I came to the U.S. So I came to the U.S. For my PhD. I did my master's there in University of Sao Paulo, and came for the U.S. to do my PhD at UC Davis in California. And my advisor there was an extension specialist in rice. And really, I didn't think about staying in academia until I got to experience kind of the extension world. I even didn't know what extension meant, I think, before that. My idea of being a professor was teaching, which I was never very fond of. And so more like late into my PhD was when I started considering a position in academia. And my thought was always to get a position in research and extension, because those are the two things I like the most. And yeah, so in Brazil, back in Brazil, in my growing up and up to my master's, I worked with mostly grain crops, mostly corn and soybean. When I came to the US, I worked with rice. That's a big crop in California. Very different system from anything else, with everything being flooded, but it's still a row crop. So I really like that. And then after that, I went to Oregon State. I was there for 3 years, was there as a postdoc, and then into a research position afterwards. Worked there mostly with barley, but other small grains. And then when this position came up at Penn State, I remember reading the position description and I really liked it. It was a lot of my background, you know, agronomy on those row crops. And yeah, and it worked out and here I am.
Well, it's great. I mean, you've been through some very diverse climates, going from UC Davis and the rice to Oregon, which is not UC Davis and where that's at. And then Oregon is definitely not like Pennsylvania. So it's fascinating. How does Pennsylvania relate to maybe Minas Gerais and Sao Paulo?
How does they relate? They're very different. But I would say, I mean, with all those crops, they're row crops. So there's, I think the agronomy part, there's a lot of things that translate there. But generally, you know, systems, landscapes are very different. So for example, with rice in California, they're very big farms. Each field is 30 acres. And then here in Pennsylvania, and very flat, whereas here in Pennsylvania, we have smaller fields. The landscape is very hilly, smaller. Like we have a lot of those triangular fields. The soil here is shallow also. So that's a big yield limiting factor is water, which that's part of my interest too, because my work in California with rice was about water use and irrigation. So there's that. I think I bring a little bit of that background here to Penn State. And with Brazil, I guess there are some commonalities, but a lot of different things too. I mean, it's crazy here how much we can go. I mean, we have a lot of challenges here, definitely with cold weather and all of that. But on the other hand, with pests, for example, we usually get by without any insecticides, a lot of times with fungicides in soybeans. Whereas if you go to Brazil and talk to people there, it's three applications over in one season of fungicide and an insecticide just to get regular yields, because there's so much more disease and insect pressure there.
That always does blow me away when I work with my Brazilian counterparts. So let's dive in, though. Tell us a little bit about some of your ongoing research. What are you looking at?
Yeah, so I work with grain crops agronomy, so that's usually very generic. But I would say in my lab, we're doing a lot of work focused on improving nitrogen management, and that's mostly focused on corn. And in general, water use efficiency, let's call it that. And I guess with both of those things, we have been doing some work with cover crops, because cover crops influence those two things, right? It influences nitrogen before the cash crop is planted, and it also influences water availability in the soil before the cash crop. So we've been doing some with cover crops, but also with just fertility management, remote sensing. I have some students working with drone and satellite imagery to try to pick up nitrogen in the crops and try to improve recommendations for corn. What else we have? And then just, I guess, a little bit of work in different places. Like every agronomist, like I have a student who's working with PFAS, which is the hot topic recently with all those concerns. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that's most of it.
That's your research side. What crop I'm going to ask a few extension questions. So is corn the primary crop that you're getting as far as extension questions, or what kind of realm are your extension questions coming to you at?
Corn, I would say, is king here in Pennsylvania. Still, I think if you ask most farmers, that's the moneymaker. But I would say soybeans also have been really, you know, if you compare it with the early 90s where people were just starting with soybeans here in Pennsylvania, it's been, acreage has been increasing a lot on the soybean side, and people have been seeing it more as a profitable crop, second to corn. So those two definitely are the bigger ones. And I would say wheat third. Wheat is kind of one year and they say, oh, I don't, no, didn't make any money. And then maybe another year that's a breadwinner. But it's kind of variable. With, we have a lot of that. That one is one that typically people put on a fungicide. We have a lot of disease pressure on wheat, and that's a big concern. With the main one is fusarium.
Along the lines, I was looking into some of the work you're doing. There's a topic that popped up about organic oats into Pennsylvania. Can you tell us a little bit about the rationale and how that's gone?
Yeah, I forgot about the oats. That I have a student who's, I'm co-advising with John Wallace, who's our wheat scientist here on campus. And I call that the Monster Project because it's just so much field work, but it's very interesting. It's actually myself, the wheat scientist, John Wallace, and then two other professors from different departments, one on the food science, another one from the animal science. So it's a very interdisciplinary work. And the idea there is to, it's on organic systems that's funded by ORAI. And we wanted to diversify systems. The organic farmers really need that, you know, more diverse systems. And we're looking at oat as a potential crop for, to fill in that gap that, you know, to reduce weed pressure, and it has a short cycle. So we did a lot of talking with stakeholders. We have an advisory group, and we kind of ended up with oats, spring oats, being a crop that we wanted to look further. There is not a lot of new varieties. So one thing we're exploring is just some varieties that are out there. And we're interested in looking at varieties that will go both for the food market and also for the feed market. So, yeah, so that work is, you know, plain agronomy. We're doing a bunch of interactions with between varieties and fertility and row spacing, seeding rate. We have there's a part that we're looking at cultivar mixtures to see if, you know, can we get an overall better outcome with three varieties planted together instead of pure varieties. So yeah, that's a big part of that work. That
was that driven more of a grassroots? Was the communities coming to you and the farmers coming to you looking for that? Or is it a combination of the interaction of extension and the farmer? Or is this an idea that the researchers had said, let's see if it works and then get farmer buy-in?
I think maybe both at the same time. There was a lot of, I don't know if the oats came to mind like straight away, but there was a lot of idea from extension, like from our stakeholders, about that need. They conveyed that needs to, for another crop outside of corn and soybeans, that they need something different in their rotation to mainly to keep the weeds, to control the weeds. And the other thing is tillage, because there is some interest in no-till organic, which is very hard to do. But the oats with the timing, it's a little bit early. And, you know, in the spring when you're planting. So that also helps with weed control. So, yeah, I think it was both things together, but definitely that need for a different crop in that organic corn and soybean rotation came to us from the stakeholders.
You had another topic that I was looking through in a recent publication of yours that you're a part of anyways. And I look at it in the, it's the cover crop in soy. And so I see it as, I was thinking that you would be looking at cover, because it's cover crop termination and soybean. The title of the manuscript is Manipulating Cover Crop Termination Time to Alter Soil's Moisture Dynamics and Mitigate Soybean Water Stress. In my mind, I was always thinking, you know, Pennsylvania at soybean planting time would likely be wet. And so I'm thinking about mitigating that wet soil condition, cold, wet soil that we may see. I would have never thought about the water stress until you mentioned the shallow soils. So I'm intrigued by this. I haven't read the manuscript, but I'm intrigued by at least what you're able to do or doing with cover crops in terms of soybean water management, both the early and the late.
Yeah, so we see that that's very true what we just said, that if you have a wet spring, that cover crop that's growing is taking up water, right? So it's helping to dry up the soil ahead of soybean planting or of the cash crop planting. And that happens, and we've seen that even in those experiments there. But I think what's most interesting from those findings from that study is that biomass that from the cover crop that stays on the ground, it acts as a mulch. It stays on the soil. You know, that depends on how much biomass you have, and the carbon to nitrogen ratio is also another important thing there. But if you have those things, enough of those two things, that mulch effect will stay on for a long time, like throughout soybean, the reproductive phases of the soybean, and that helps conserve soil moisture. And we saw that it actually helped the soybeans with water stress and translated into yields. To me, the most surprising, I would say, part of that study was I thought that would happen. That mulch would help conserve soil moisture and that would help with water stress. But one thing we looked at there was the trade-off between, okay, if you need to have more biomass, that'll help with the water stress factor. But if you need more biomass, a lot of times the only way to get that is to delay soybean planting. Mm-hmm. And there's a trade-off there because we all know the later, obviously, you know, soil conditions have to be fit and all of that, but all of that considered, the later you plant those soybeans, the lower the yield potential, just because we don't have enough, you know, light in the season to keep those soybeans growing. But what we saw with this study was that even in those cases where we delayed soybean, it wasn't, you know, extremely late, but if we delayed soybean planting for 2 weeks, you know, past that, the beginning of that window, so let's say towards the end of our ideal planting window, that benefit that we had from with the cover crop biomass making the soybeans less water stressed, that was more important than delaying the negative effect of delaying soybean planting. So we saw in some cases higher yields with that soybeans that were planted later, but on top of higher cover crop biomass compared to soybeans that were planted timely, let's say earlier, with less cover crop biomass.
Within the soy corn rotation, now you're talking about influencing the carbon and nitrogen ratio by delaying that cover crop. You're building more carbon and you're stretching that carbon and nitrogen ratio out. Has there been much look at the follow-up corn crop? Are you needing to, we see a lot of times as we let the cover mature, we're needing to counteract that wide carbon and nitrogen ratio with a little bit of extra nitrogen to help mineralization and reduce immobilization. In your environment, have you gone that far, or what's that look like?
Yeah, and that study was in soybeans, but there has been studies here and in other places with corn, and that's an important consideration because with corn, that if you have a lot of the more biomass and the higher the carbon to nitrogen ratio, that will tie up your nitrogen. So typically, couldn't tell you the numbers right now, but we recommend increasing your nitrogen at planting if that cover crop will be followed by corn. I don't know how much for the next year, but I would imagine that that effect would linger a little bit into the next year as well. So that's a good point. I'm not sure. Yeah. Like how much we have to adjust that nitrogen for the following year. I'm sure there's work on that, but for sure for the same year, if you're planting that corn, depending on how much biomass of the cover crop and seed to man ratio, you have to increase your nitrogen rate a little bit.
Back on the covers and soys, I guess, I'm assuming since you're going into legume, your covers are non-leguminous. Is it either cereal, brassica, or are they all cereal? Or what's your cover crops in Pennsylvania across the whole? Can you kind of describe the different cover crop systems?
Yeah, for the most part, they're cereals. There are some folks that do mixes and with legumes with the intention of putting on some nitrogen there. But I would say the vast majority here doing, I'd say wheat and barley are the most common. And a lot of people use cereal rye also. Cereal rye is the one that I would say is the most robust, you know, very hardy, very winter hardy. And it produces a lot of biomass also. You can get a lot of growth in the fall, a lot of growth in the spring, while some of those other ones are still dormant. But I would say the most common are wheat and barley. And I think some folks sometimes will plant that, and if it's a good crop, they'll just take it all the way to grain. Yeah. I think that's part of the motivation too. But we have a lot of cost share programs, and mm-hmm. some of those reward the mixture is better. So that's some motivation. But I would say from talking with farmers here, a lot of them, I don't know if it's the majority, but a lot of them don't do it for the cost share programs. They do it for the benefits that they see. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest motivation is soil erosion mm-hmm. with our hilly landscapes. So that's their biggest motivation.
The paper, and I didn't read it. We've talked about the cover crops and types. What are the termination methods used in both your work and just by the farmers? Or is it just a chemical burn down? Or are there a lot of crimpers? What's going on? Or is it green? Is there a lot of green plant or planting green?
I think the majority is just a glyphosate. Yeah. Chemical termination, ahead of planting. So about 3 weeks, 2 weeks before planting, that's the most common. But there are a lot of people who do different things with, crimping is a lot of people do that. A lot of people do planting green. I'm sure a lot more than in the Midwest and in other places. So a lot of people are a fan of that for that, because it will give you that extra time, right? So we were talking about trade-offs of between planting time and cover crop termination. If you terminated at planting, let's say that planting green, you gain that extra time in the spring of that cover crop growth, which is very important. Sometimes you get 1 week of hot weather and it doubles the biomass, but you still can keep your planting dates as scheduled. But yeah, a lot of people are doing that. There is a learning curve, I would say, to doing that, because you got to have your planter technology, I won't even say technology, but just have your planter, really adjusted to go through that biomass and not have anything get tied up on cutters and on, row cleaners, things like that. But once you got that figured out, I think some people are very happy with that system.
So we've got a couple more minutes. Is there anything that you'd like to highlight? Tell me one exciting research thing you're doing right now that we haven't had a chance to delve in yet. So what's the one thing you want to talk about in the last three minutes or so?
Well, since we're in the cover crop topic, I would say we have a new model. It's going to be a tool very soon, probably in the next few months. It will be published as an open source tool for people to use, that estimates nitrogen in cover crops, and that's very useful for making your nitrogen recommendations. The tool for the cover crop will be out in very soon, but I'm hoping maybe by the end of the year, maybe early next year, our vision is to integrate that into one online platform that integrates the nitrogen recommendations for corn, and that includes the cover crop part. So if you have more complex systems with cover crops, That tool will give you a recommendation using remote sensing data and weather data. And we're just starting to work on kind of automating out of that so that somebody can just put in your GPS coordinates, draw your field boundaries, and get all of that information and the recommendations straight out from an open platform. So that's, I'm very excited about that. That fully automated tool, it'll be a little bit while to get that, but the cover crop tool will be out in a couple months.
Well, you're a little bit in my realm on this one, so I'm kind of curious, where are you pulling for that platform? Where are you pulling your imagery from? Is it a Sentinel background or?
Yeah, well, so that's something we still gotta, well, for the tool that we have right now, that's from, you can use Drone if you have that, but it's from Planet Labs. But the one that we envision being public would be with the fully integrated would be probably from HLS2 because it's an open source, so it's less lower resolution, but it's an open source.
What is the repeatability or the flyover of that one? Because Planet usually get day or two, but Planet also has a price tag associated with it. And so what kind of repeatability are you seeing with HLS2?
You mean comparing the Planet with the HLS2?
Yeah, well, just is it a 7-day? Is it a 14-day Sentinel 2? We get a lot of Sentinel 2s that are, 14-day between images.
Oh, yeah. Well, so what we saw with our model, I think plus or minus 4 days doesn't really matter.
Yep.
So that gives you, an 8-day window that you can get that image. So, yeah, I wouldn't say it's perfect. Sometimes you don't get, if you get cloudy days, you're past that window.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that's more than I thought. I thought 8 days would be too much to wait, but it doesn't seem to affect the model that much.
I've seen similar. I've done a lot of models, and I've always put about a 4 to 5 day window on it. We can get within an error range that's like that.
It's time for our famous three.
WiseNetics turns podcast airtime into brand authority. We don't sell ads. We elevate voices. If you're ready to boost your authority in the industry, access WiseNetics.com. And speak with a brand authority specialist. Let's transform expertise into influence, starting now.
Well, Daniela, we've already hit our time, so let's wrap up our three questions that all my guests get. And first is, during your career, what's been a good go-to work resource for you?
Yeah, I would say lately I'm working a lot with the Science for Success group on the soybean extension side, and we finally have a good website for that, just for that group. Yeah, it took a while. but yeah, I'm very happy that the group has put that together. So I would say that's a really good resource for soybeans that I've been using a lot.
And we didn't even get to dive into that project. We'll just leave that one for another day, the recent work that the Soybean Science for Success group has done.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Yeah. Moving to the next question. What do you do for free time? What do you enjoy doing if you're not working?
Nowadays, I just had our first daughter. She's 3 months old. So that's all my free time is going towards her.
Oh, fantastic. All right. And our last question, where do people go to find more about the work that you and your lab's doing?
Yeah, I would say just Google my name and Penn State and you'll find our website. We have a website where we're trying to put most of our work there, both extension articles and scientific peer review articles. And I'm on Twitter or X. My handle is Carrijo Crops if anyone wants to check it out.
I'll be adding you here shortly. So with that, folks, that wraps up another episode of the Crop Science Podcast Show presented by WiseNetics. Thanks for joining us today with our guest, Dr. Daniela Carrijo, Assistant Professor and Extension Specialist of Grain Crop Production in the Department of Plant Sciences at Pennsylvania State University. Remember, if you enjoyed this podcast, hit that subscribe button so you get notifications anytime we drop a new podcast. And also share this video with your friends and colleagues, anybody you think would enjoy the topic we covered today. And finally, make sure you leave us comments, whether you have questions for our guests or suggestions for new guests. With that, Danielle, thank you so much for the joining. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Brian. Same here.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.